Hello. My name is Dick Cavett, and I hope you'll stay tuned. I'll be your host for the next half hour. I can't guarantee that you'll love the show, but who knows? You might switch channels and get something much worse.
La, 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 la.
Welcome once again to the Letterman Podcast. My name is Mike Chisholm. Before we get going here, the Letterman Podcast is brought to you by... We have one sponsor at the Letterman Podcast, one sponsor only, and that is Rupert G. and the Hello Deli. Full disclosure, I don't know how many more episodes I'm going to be able to say that, or at least be able to say that in the incarnation that things are right now. Rupert is selling the deli and things are happening. We are going to, I know I've been saying for the past few weeks, we're going to provide an update. We will. There will be an update coming. Maybe the second week of October, we'll have some stuff out where we can talk about Rupert. But you know what? I don't know how it's going to go after the fact. What I do know is that for 30 years, Rupert G has been, and his business partner May have been serving soup and sandwiches to the good folks of New York. Nestled within the womb of the Ed Sullivan Theater sits the Hello Deli, and I could not be happier for Rupert that he is moving on to the next phase of his life. You know, 400 and some odd appearances on Letterman, and a friend of the show, a friend of Worldwide Pants. I'm so grateful to have the connection that I do with him, and I'm going to be seeing him soon, which is a delight. But if you want official Late Show with David Letterman merchandise, if you like, Late Show mugs, if you want a Late Show with David Letterman t-shirt, not this one, this is from the 10th anniversary, but other ones, long sleeve, short sleeve, blue, gray, hats, they have all sorts of Late Show with David Letterman apparel. And different swag, as they like to say. Go get them. Go get them now. Go to hello-deli.com. Like I said, he's selling the deli. He also sells his own t-shirts. Go to hello-deli.com and get your Rupert G or your Late Show with David Letterman merchandise. Who knows? Maybe in a couple of months, I'll be able to say, yeah, the website's going and he's still doing it. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out from Rupert directly what's going to happen with that. As soon as we possibly can. But what I do know is that it's open for business right now. Hello-deli.com. And you can get yourself Late Show with David Letterman merchandise. That's out of the way. Today's guest is a legend. He is a legend. He's a legend in broadcasting. He's a legend in stand-up. I would say in writing, both as a comedy writer and also as a commentator, observist, intellectual. An athletic intellectual, as you'll find. Dick Cavett is an absolute legend. He was a mentor of David Letterman. I just am so blown away that we got to have this conversation here today. I'm going to get to it right away here, but all I can tell you is talking to someone like Dick, if I have any advice for anybody, if ever you get a chance to talk to somebody who you admire, that's been around the block a few more times than you have, be present, be in that moment. It was, short of 90 minutes, but an hour and 20 minutes or so of absolute, presence and bliss for me. We talk about all sorts of Letterman related stuff, but also with him, it was really, really tough preparing for this one because it would be so easy to just get wrapped up into the career of this broadcast legend. But I wanted to make sure that it was as much Letterman centric as possible as well, because the two have so many parallels in their careers. I've got an entire list of similarities here, uniquely both to Dick and to David Letterman. We had a phenomenal conversation. I appreciate him so very, very much. At the end of the day, I believe he is the ultimate elder statesman of late night, certainly of late night, of talk shows, of broadcasting. And I just really am honored and humbled to have had this conversation. So without any more of my babbling on, I'm a blowhard. I apologize. Here is the Letterman Podcast is proud to present our conversation with the legend, Dick Cavett.
You're back.
Oh, excellent. Mr. Cavett, I just appreciate you time. What's that?
Would you rather call me Mr. Dick or something more, less formal than me? Well, you say whatever you like. Can't hurt me.
Did your mom call you Richard?
Yes.
Is she the only one who has called you Richard in the last, you know,
decades?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
My mom calls me Michael. She will never call me Mike.
I think Richard Burton called me Richard, if that counts.
Yeah, of course it does. Okay. I cannot thank you enough for taking time to be on the Letterman podcast today. You know, when this connection was made to make this happen, I had a couple lovely conversations with your amazing wife, Martha. Does she ever make you call her doctor?
You got the amazing wife. Okay, yeah. No. She knows her place. Nobody's going to hear any of this, are they?
No. Oh, God, of course not. No, she and I had a couple really, really great conversations. And I feel like if she was a gatekeeper, she opened the gate. And I cannot thank you enough for this. This is an extreme honor to talk to you. Hopefully this is going to be an interview. There's so much stuff out there with all of the books that you've written. Of course, your incredible body of work. That focus on, you know, I'm hoping to go down a couple of roads here that maybe haven't gone down, because we are skewing the conversation to David Letterman and the Letterman of it all, and all that. So I'm really excited about this. Thank you so much, Dick. It means it's a huge honor to be talking to you.
Could you repeat something you said earlier?
Certainly.
Your incredible body. You did. You don't maybe not believe it.
We saw it when you were in the ring with Ali. You had some great acrobatics in the ring with Ali, messing around years ago. There's going to be a lot of talk to the viewers and the listeners of this show. There's going to be a lot of talk of amazing moments, and most of these are available on the YouTube or various broadcasting systems. I highly recommend you go and actually check out some of these moments. Of course, from the Letterman perspective, there is an entire on Don Giller's channel. That's who's here in the background watching us and doing that.
Oh.
On his channel, there is all of Dick's performances and appearances on Letterman, all in one run.
There's one I was wondering about. There's one that somebody labeled the best talk show segment of the year.
That you and Eddie?
But it was the one with Eddie Murphy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I produced that racist toothpaste or whatever it was. Yeah. Okay.
That was such a phenomenal segment, because it's the unlikely buddies. And Eddie, his adoration for you was evident. But it still allowed him to be funny, and you were just being yourself out there. And the two of you together had a wonderful, wonderful chemistry, which Dave it's early Dave, but it just was so awesome to watch you two just go back and forth. And then Dave kind of just enjoy the discourse.
By the way, I have lost all contact with him and various other people, thanks to my odd computer. Can you give me a means to find Eddie again?
Do you have the clip?
Email or anything for
him? I have that clip. I've got permission from Worldwide Pants to send that clip to you. I have it, and it's going to be sent right after, as soon as we're done here. I'm going to resend that.
But if I want to send him an email, I don't have that anymore.
Or for Eddie?
Yeah.
For Dave, we can probably come up with something. For Eddie, I'm not as sure, but I am certain that we're all six degrees away from each other. I'm sure we can make that happen.
Tell him I'm willing to pay him the money I owe him. That'll do it.
You know what? We'll isolate this clip and we'll throw it out on the YouTube and see if we can get Eddie Murphy contacting Dick Cavett.
Yeah, he'll jump at that.
And they can resume the buddy comedy that is their rapport.
You wave a dollar in front of Eddie, he'll snap at it. Okay.
Oh God, this is going to be fun. Any nervousness is going away here. Okay. I really want to. I I just, you have such a gigantic body of work. Again, the nice body of work. You are a legend when it comes to talk show hosts. And I'm very curious. You are also an incredible writer. You are also a stand-up, whereas we look at Dave, and Dave has prided himself as a broadcaster, but certainly knows how to work an audience and is very good at that. Yeah. But you are also a pure stand-up. Of the things that you did, writing New York Times for Jenna Carson, for Jack Parr, for Jerry Lewis, four books, conversation, discourse, whether it be about entertainment, whether it be about social issues, or stand up performing and making an audience laugh and getting them in the palm of your hand and doing your thing. Of the three, did you have a favorite, or did you like all three equally?
I think I was born to like performing in general. I don't crave going back to doing stand up, but if I did, I'd probably like that too. So I can't really pick a favorite route for delivering my gems.
I feel you.
Okay.
Yep. You worked for people that, you got a chance to meet some of your greatest heroes in the world of entertainment and broadcasting. You got to write for some of them. Yeah. And then you got to look at them as peers. And the gratefulness that you have for that is evident no matter what decade you're talking about it, all the way up to now. And then when you contrast that to now, I want to talk about the letter that Dave wrote you. But then I was listening to Stephen Colbert. He's on a podcast with the other five late night hosts right now during the writer's strike. And in one of the last episodes, he talked about his adoration for you and the fact that he has gotten to strike up a friendship with you and what that means to him. Looking at from your vantage point where you are, and I would say the elder statesman of late night talk show hosts, you got a chance to meet your heroes, become peers, and then become the hero of others. I'm curious about your perspective about that.
Yeah, not many people get that opportunity, to worship and drool over somebody's talents and performance, and then find yourself sitting next to them later, and even going for coffee or something intimate like that. That's a real blessing. And but I hear a voice saying, "This will be deducted from your share in paradise." What is that from?
I don't know. I can't call that.
Share in paradise. I want your viewers to all inform me where that came into my head.
I bet you Colbert knows. That sounds like something that he would know. That sounds like a quote he could pull out of the air.
Yeah. I bet it's Googleable. I bet it is.
I'm certain it's Googleable.
Yeah.
I want to talk about your rapport with Johnny Carson, because you were working for Jack Parr. Johnny took over. You started working for him, writing for him, and then started appearing opposite him, and it would be considered counter-programming competition, that sort of thing. Yet you still seem to maintain a wonderful relationship, certainly professionally, because you would appear on the Tonight Show.
I was ashamed of a couple of incidents I had with him, and one was, I was in a parking lot at CBS backing my car out in California and doing 2 weeks there. And so was he. And he had a DeLorean and he said, "Come on, ride this." And I said, "It's okay. I got my car riders." And he said, "Come on." And I said, "No, it's okay." Like a fool. Why didn't I go? And I thought, Jesus, I really hurt his feelings. But this was all solved and dissolved when later we had a wonderful dinner together in a restaurant out in LA and talked about everything, including young men losing their virginity or trying to, and that sort of thing. So we had one great talk personally, and that was really the last time I spent time with Johnny, and I'm glad it it ever happened. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Would that have been, you know, you had an appearance on The Tonight Show, I think it was in 83, and you and he were musing about jokes that you had written for him, and really the complexity of humor, you know, throwing anagrams into it and smart humor. Were you always a guy who didn't want to necessarily lower yourself to the standard of the audience, but to bring them up when it came to your humor?
If I was, it was unconscious, because I could never saw myself as someone who brought anybody up, though I'm told in the sense of that phrase that I did. But there was a time when I really worried that I was offending him. I was doing the show for the annual 2 weeks in California, a tradition that Jack started. I was out there. And I finished a taping, and I was just on the way to the parking lot to drive back to the hotel. And somebody said, there's a phone call for you. And I said, I'm leaving. And they said, it's Johnny Carson. And I said, sure it is. Tell him something. I said, no, it really is Johnny. And that seemed unlike Johnny. I got on the phone with him from my temporary dressing room in California. And he said, meet me at the following restaurant. And I said, oh, Johnny, they've already taken my nice clothes back and locked them up. I've just got on, you know, kind of crummy looking stuff. And the worst part is a pair of muddy white tennis shoes. He laughed and he said, come ahead anyway. So I did. And horribly, right away, suddenly they needed me suddenly to retape something. And I thought, oh, get this over with. I finally headed toward that restaurant, got stuck in traffic. And I thought, nobody is dumb enough to still be waiting for me. And I sent him, and he said, come ahead. So I did. I got to this nice, lovely, dark California restaurant. Didn't see him. And then I checked at the bar, and he was sitting there in one of his bespoke suits, looking like $1 million, but wearing muddy white tennis shoes. I thought that was wonderful. Somebody said, oh, come on. Where's he going to get muddy white tennis shoes? I said, if you're Johnny Carson, you get them. and he had them, and he so loved his joke. It was actually touching in a way. And that was when we had a wonderful evening. Muddy white tennis shoes.
I appreciate. One of the moments that you actually shared with Johnny on The Tonight Show, which must have been insanely gratifying, was being able to tell him how much you appreciated the first time you actually broke him up. And I think you did an ad lib line, something about Gilligan's Island. And it was.
Yes. Oh, yeah. How true. I'm glad of the things you remember of me. You remember one of the good ones. Yeah, I was on the show quite a long time ago, but I was already somewhat established. And I was one of four guests. It turned out I came out first, then I moved down and another guest. So at the end of the show, I was the extreme right side. And he asked so-and-so, what are you doing? I'm making a movie. What are you doing? Well, I got a new special. What are you doing? I've just signed for a wonderful series. And I didn't have anything particular. Make that anything. And he said, well, what are you doing, Dick? And I thought, oh, God, I hoped I'd stretched this long enough that he wouldn't get to me. But he did. And the gods smiled upon me. And I heard myself say, I'm working, on a new idea. It's a sitcom, really. It's a humorous version of Gilligan's Island.
That is just...
It fractured him. And of course, Earl Wilson and others who quoted it, misquoted it.
Yeah.
And it was a lesson in how not to word humor by saying, it's a funny version or it's a comic version. No, 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 a humorous version. Dummies. Oh, anyway, I'm getting carried away. But
no.
That's a good moment.
You you have full permission to get carried away any way that you like on this show, sir.
Okay.
During those times, so that's the early 80s. You know, the landscape of late night was changing, television expanding. You know, you were absolutely well established by that point. Now let's bring it back to the Letterman of it all, as I like to say.
Okay.
As at some point, and I want to think it's maybe the early 70s, you receive a letter from a young David Letterman.
Yes, I did. Do you have that, by the way?
I wish I did. I wish I did too,
because I remember I really liked it. And at the end of it, he signed it, "Your pal, David Letterman." And I like to think he would still today. I don't think I've offended him in the meantime. Yeah, we had some wonderful times together.
Certainly. And
he
again,
was impressed
I cannot...
with me once in Central Park.
Yeah.
I was jogging around the track in Central Park, and I ran into Dave, and so I jogged with him, and then I turned around and jogged at top speed backwards. Actually, I am, this is awful to have to say, athletically gifted. And people think I'm not, maybe, because, you're an intellectual, that awful word that will get you off television fast if you're not careful. And then I feel need to point out that I was a gymnast in high school. I wasn't obviously cut out for football or baseball. And my dad, who taught at that high school, a real embarrassment at that age, said it would be nice if you could letter in something.
Yep.
I thought, what can I letter in? Stamp collecting? Or the? They had a new gymnastics team, but it was poverty stricken. They had only mats.
Yep.
And a pommel horse. Nobody likes the pommel horse when they start. This is just a fact, not an opinion, the hardest piece of apparatus to work. Well, we also got parallel bars, then we got rings, then we got everything. And everybody abandoned the pommel horse, and I thought, I might as well stay with this. And ultimately, the punchline that I'm so humble about is that I became the pommel horse state champion. That's almost my proudest accomplishment. Yeah.
Take that, intellectuals. I go back to that clip with Ali. You know,
yeah.
You are lithe and absolutely acrobatic in that little bit that you did with Muhammad Ali in the ring. And I love that clip. And of course, the documentary.
I think
HBO,
I did a fake forward fall on that when he allegedly punched me. Yeah,
a pro wrestler could not have done it better. As Dave was coming up, and as the, you know, everything was expanding, was it conscious to you that Dave was kind of a protege to Johnny Carson? I mean, you saw late night, under Carson Productions getting that 12:30 slot during one of Johnny's famous contract negotiations where he gained more power and whatnot. He gets his 12:30 slot. And David Letterman gets the nod for late night. At that point, you had known Dave already a little bit, right? Obviously,
yes,
from the letter,
true.
But
yeah.
From the morning show.
Yeah.
Did you see his talent right away?
Say again.
Did you see Dave's extreme talent right away?
Oh yeah, I mean, how could you not?
Yeah.
It didn't take much brains to see how good he was. Yeah. Yeah, I thought this guy's got it, and that's a nice feeling. You see somebody, you're not aware of their work very much, or if at all, and then they just shine, and you think, somebody new and good. What's his name again? Letterman.
Late Night with David Letterman.
Yeah.
and I don't want to put words and revise history in any way, but there are some who would look and say, okay, well, this is kind of Johnny Carson's, you know, guy. This is the guy that he's shining up. I thought you might have an interesting perspective on that idea back then, having the dynamic that you had, being, you know, with the relationship with Johnny that you had. Was that apparent to you?
Was I aware of my relationship with Carson was way back, by the way. You may know this, but he was a big star to me while both of us were in Nebraska. He was on WOW TV, I believe it was, in Omaha, and it had his show entitled The Johnny Carson Show. So you couldn't get any bigger than that, than being a star in Omaha. One day he came to Lincoln, where I lived, and did an evening of magic in a church basement. I'm still a member of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And so I took two friends. I said, let's go see Johnny Carson. He's, you know, the guy from TV in Omaha. And they said, oh, yeah, yeah. So we went to the church basement. There was a little theater. The curtains were closed. In my way that I did in a bigger way later in life, I just boldly went backstage and confronted him. Years later, it was Judy Garland and folks like that. But he looked annoyed, and I knew why, because he was setting up his magic act. And a magician, when he's putting the dove into the dove pan, does not want to be seen. And I said, it's okay, Johnny, we're a magician. And he changed, and he was great, and he showed us how to do card fans of certain kinds of stuff. And then we sat in the audience, and during his act, he said, you have some magicians here in Lincoln. Right there, those three guys, would you three stand up? And we did, and they applauded, and we thought we were on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Absolutely. Yep.
Introduced by the star in the audience. That evening ended, and we watched worshipfully as he glided back into the night in what I think was a 1938 DeSoto, back to Omaha and back to the world of glamour.
And then years later, your paths would cross multiple times in multiple ways.
The odds against two people from Nebraska ending up sort of in the same path like that is pretty strange. Yeah. People would say, is there something in the water in Nebraska that makes talk show hosts? And I would pretend to be amused.
It's that Midwestern charm, that fabled Midwestern charm that so many have written about. You know, Letterman obviously has it as well, and others.
Yeah.
You know, I want to ask you a little bit about the programming and the counter programming and whatnot. I grew up in a time. The reason that I got so interested in this stuff was because of if you've read Bill Carter's book, The Late Shift. Right then and there, I was in high school at that point. That was my okay, and I'd already loved Letterman and the whole saga about that. I want to get to that, and I want to ask about your viewpoint about, you know, the first Late Shift and then the second one, the contentiousness with late night TV, counter programming, booking, all of that, Johnny's fallout with Joan Rivers, all of that stuff is right in my wheelhouse. But back then, when you
must
were
be
on,
bulging. Okay, go ahead. You can only contain so much of that stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
No, don't ever be sorry. But before that, the generation before that, you know, the narrative is that the Tonight Show was this unstoppable force that nobody could ever counter program against. But you had this amazing career. I think of my opinion is you complimented Johnny. The things that Johnny were, you were not, in many respects. And you know, a couple examples being nobody knew what Johnny really was politically. You would definitely talk about social issues and things like that. The musical acts on your show would be featured, and they'd be first rather than, you know, traditionally at the end of the show. That kind of thing, and many, many other things. A couple questions. Was that cognizant? And the second question is, when it came to booking things, did you and Johnny ever look at each other as competitors? Because it certainly got that way in the generation that I described that I came up in.
There's so many things to worry about that I tried not to worry about our being competitors. But and I remember when I first went there, and there were two kinds of columns. Cabot is out to beat Johnny Carson off the air,
yep,
to dethrone the king and so on. Or Cabot must be crazy to think anybody is going to tune in to see him when you can get Johnny Carson. Why would they?
Yep.
As history records, I did not bash him off the air. if I had, we might even then have remained friends. But that was just never going to happen, and therefore didn't. But people would say, you must hate each other because you're so desperately competing with each other. Crazy to think of that. I never thought of it. I would have been content if I'd lasted 3 months against Carson and then gone on to something else. So that fortunately did not become an obsession, as some people thought it must be. Weird. Anyway, we both survived largely.
I would say. I would certainly say. So then let's contrast that. You've done a great job setting the table as to the attitude that safe to say that you had towards each other at that point. Again, I point out the fact that you're appearing on his shows and things like that. It's friendly, similar to kind of how it is now. You got the five major talk shows hosts, working together during the strike, that sort of thing. So sort of a similarity there, but some trouble in the middle. The late night went and kind of blew itself up, and the late shift happened. I am very, very curious, when Johnny announced his retirement and the race began and all of that nonsense and ballyhoo happened, what was your take on all of that?
I really tried not to think in those terms, and I think it's lucky, because if it did, you could obsess on it and think about it every day. And I always just thought, I'm going to take what comes. I've done much more already than I ever thought I would. Maybe it'll keep going. And I fortunately wasn't crazy enough to think, the minute I get on the air, Carson's going to have his ratings drop to zero.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it all. I must say, I didn't really have any pessimistic feelings about it, nor assuring optimistic feelings about it. Maybe that's fortunate. Maybe I'm just going to go ahead and do it and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think that's an accurate picture of myself.
And when Dave finally made the announcement, okay, we're gonna take our pick up our tent pegs and move them. I've got an entire card here of similarities between yourself and your body of work versus that of Dave's. One of which is that multiple networks. You have taken the same show, or the same you, the same brand that is Dick Cavett, and you have given that to multiple networks. Hadn't been done in a while. And then suddenly Dave is like, hey, we're moving over to CBS. We're going to do an 11:30 show, that kind of a thing. I'm curious about your take about that.
I'm amazed by it. When somebody said, you've been on four times, I thought, you're crazy. It feels like I've just kind of come on and stayed on and maybe took a pause, and then I stayed on some more, and then I stayed on some more. And when I looked at it and it was four different shows, I'm still amazed at it. it's enjoyable in a way. When Decades Network ran up until about a half a year ago, ran the Cavett shows, five nights a week. I kept getting other people saying how grateful they were to see them. And then I thought, maybe I should look at them. And I did. and I was amazed in many ways. Probably the most unbelievable way, well, that's too forceful, but I would think this show is going very well. Mm-hmm. This is a famous person, and I could pass a lie detector test if I hadn't been watching this right now, but I never met this person. I didn't know what was coming. I didn't know what was said. If someone had asked me, did you ever have X on your show? I would have said, probably, I couldn't be sure.
Yeah.
But that was really startling. And it had to do with the fact that the freakishness of doing 5 nights a week of 90-minute ad-lib television, you can only survive if you can knock out what went the night before and the night before that and live in the moment doing the one you're doing.
Yes.
But one time, this is kind of related to that. I came home one night from taping, and somebody was at my apartment, and they said, how'd it go? And I said, fine. Was it one of your 90-minute shows? And I said, yeah, it was. I think, women. And they said, well, who was it? And I said, it was, I could not think whom I had just taped with an hour earlier.
Yep.
Finally, I did. And it's understandably that it was the obscure, relatively obscure name, Lucille Ball. I was astonished. Not too far after that, I came in one day and dropped my stuff off in Johnny's office while I was still writing for him, obviously.
Yep.
And they said, well, he's not in a very good mood. So I went in and he wasn't. And I said, is anything bothering you? In my nosy way. And he said, well, yeah. I came home last night and I had the usual show, and my wife said, how'd it go? And I said, it's fine. And she said, who was it? And I said, well, and he had had the usual 4 guests that he usually had. He said, I couldn't think of one of them. That's a strange thing. It isn't ever going to happen to the average person. And it's a weird feeling, but it's understandable. Johnny was relieved that I had. And when I told him, I can't think of Lucille Ball story. So,
because he wasn't alone. Gone. Yeah. I don't know if you remember.
Once I dropped off my stuff in his office and I was having a kind of dull day.
Yep.
And I thought, I guess this is about the best I can do today. And I took it down and left it. Went back to my office and the phone rang and it said, I said, Johnny, he said, yeah. I think you're capable of a little better monologue than this. All the air went out of me. Partly because I liked him so much. And it was my fault. I hadn't worked very hard on that day's work. So everything about our relationship has, of course, ended up a very big positive part of our life. Mm-hmm. But that really, that got me. And it was good that he did it. Can we move on to a less terrible story?
No, we need to be stretched. And I like, again, the whole mentor mentee thing here is something that happens, whether it's personally or simply professionally. The mentor mentee thing is huge. If you look at those 5 hosts of today that I'm talking about, you know, they look at you guys as their mentors, whether it is personal or not. It hurts to be stretched, but when you're stretched, you can do more. You know, that's why yoga is so good. Getting out of your comfort zone gets bigger. And this is certainly one of the ingredients that allowed you to get and flourish as much as you have.
Good point. Yeah, that's right. Were there 5 of us?
Right. No, there's 5 now. There's 5 now who are doing this podcast. But
totally, there have been and are five now. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's fun for me to watch a talk show, but it wasn't necessarily always fun to watch my own on Decades. And by the way, I'm all over YouTube.
Absolutely.
Shout Factory has whole shows. And yep. I'm told that I'm on Hulu and Tubi, T-U-B-I,
yep.
which inevitably becomes Tubi or not Tubi.
They're so happy. They're going to take a clip of you saying that and they're going to put it out there. Lovely. Okay. Nice work.
make their day.
Yep.
Well, I'm repeatedly amazed at how good I was on some of those.
Yeah.
And then also at, why didn't I think to say this at that point? Oh, God, well, I missed an opportunity. So it's a mixed blessing to watch yourself.
You're a prophet. That is going to happen to me about 30 seconds after we're done today. I'm going to be exactly that. I've done that so many times where I've had a guest on that I just didn't get the two or three things that, and they're like no brainers. They're like easy home run things and you forget about it but again, though, going back, being present in the moment is the most important thing. That's where the joy is for me.
I blame the gods for not smiling on me and that they ought to treat me better. If you think, well, at least the people watching it then didn't know what I should have said.
That's true.
And then it's balanced by, wow, that was a good ad lib, and I'm surprised I did it. I don't remember it. So it's, as is most of life, are you ready? A mixed blessing.
Yes. Yes. Very well said. Don reminds me here, by the way. Back then, there were four: Johnny, yourself, Merv, Mike Douglas. And if you might count David Frost, but I don't know. Do we count David Frost?
David Frost had negligible talent. Peter Cook, the great, great British comic Peter Cook, one of the funniest people who ever lived from Beyond the Fringe, and Cook and Moore together were a genius combination. And... well, what could I say, really? Peter was asked by the London Express, some people, is there anything you regret about your life so far? And he said, yes, only one, really. So I suppose I'm lucky that there's only one. He said, I once saved David Frost from drowning. Yeah. I just thought I'd tell that.
Don also I had thought of it too, but Don also chimed in on this too. The sentiment that you talked about of not remembering Lucille Ball of all people. If you remember the night that Dave announced his retirement from Late Show, he went out and did a desk piece and probably had a comedy piece sitting right there and kind of just pushed it aside and instead just started talking to the camera, which he did more and more as the Late Show came to its end. And he talked about this story of over the weekend they took a picture of a certain bird and he brought it in and he wanted to know what kind of a bird it was, and the whole staff was going about in the research department, people were looking at it. You know, this is, of course, the staff of a multi-million-dollar network television show at the top of its game. And they discovered, oh, it was a golden eagle. This is great. This is awesome. This is fantastic. And he went home that night and was talking to his wife and son, maybe as well, I think at that point, and said, oh, I found out it was a golden eagle. And she said, who was on the show tonight? And he looked at her and he couldn't tell her who was on the show. And he said, you know what? It's time to retire. And so I love that sentiment that you.
Yeah, said. That's a wonderful moment. Yeah, that was, that deserves to be enshrined.
I've got a list here of similarities between you and Dave. One is going to be perhaps a little bit arcane to some of our viewers and listeners, but to me, this is the stuff I love. As Johnny gained his power over time, one of his contract, extensions allowed him to have ownership over the Tonight Show in an unprecedented kind of a move. Dave, when he moved over to CBS, kind of continued. He basically took the Johnny deal, other than instead of only working maybe three nights a week, other than that, that might be the only detail. He kind of took Johnny's deal and brought it over to CBS, including ownership of tapes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know with you, you have a very unique thing that's happened. Maybe not unique, but astounding. The first season, you have all your tapes, and there's a reason why you have all your tapes.
I don't, in fact, have all my tapes.
Oh, you don't have all of them. Okay.
I hate to be the one to have to break that to you.
No, that's okay.
When I began doing the shows, several weeks in, we learned that the bastard, the people I worked for, were erasing that show and using the tape to tape Let's Make a Deal. That's one of the saddest stories I've ever heard. It happened to me. I've repressed it. Of course, we immediately jumped on that.
This is an entire season, right? The first season is lost because it was recorded for Monty.
There are some that are, and one of them is a 90-minuter with Groucho. It's gone to the ages. Fortunately, I hope you saw my special of Groucho and me. That's one of the best things ever put together, and it happened. The credit goes to Robert Bader. If you want your shows put together, get Robert Bader to do it. He noticed one day that we had Groucho on many times, and he managed to get a stunning 90-minute show out of it. Google for it if you haven't seen it, folks.
Absolutely. Oh, no. Yes, without a doubt. And this is one of those heroes. Like again, David Letterman is kind of my idol when it comes to broadcasting and whatnot. Groucho was one of those guys for you, and then you got that relationship. Again, we're talking about that that luck that might shortchange you in paradise, but boy, did it feel good now.
My very first Groucho Marx movie in Nebraska, my Marx Brothers movie, if a weird sort of angel had spoken to me and said, "You're going to meet the man named Groucho on this movie."
Yeah.
I said, "This isn't possible. In the world, nothing could bring us together." And then the fact that we became great friends, and that I went to his house and we went to plays together and movies, is a blessing nobody really deserves. Yeah. God, what a great thing.
Another of the similarities between you and Dave is you both have been open about discussing mental health. Now you don't know this. My wife is building a men's mental wellness app. And that's actually where if I have any podcasting chops whatsoever, I got it because I was hosting a men's mental wellness podcast for her. It's a startup, bootstrap, doing it out of the house. And so I said to her, I said, "Look, if can I help in any way?" And she goes, "Well, we don't have anything for marketing." I said, "Well, would you like a podcast?" And she said, "Yeah, I would love that." And that is what ignited the broadcasting of yourself, of Dave, of all these people that I admire so much. I'm like, okay, well, I can do this too then. And so I got out and, I had Jeff Altman on here on the Letterman podcast. And when he found out about that, he said, "Hey, can I come on your men's mental health podcast too?" And I said, "Yeah." And he talked about depression and Dave has talked about his mental health journey publicly as well. I just want to tell you, I have a wife, and this is another one of those things where another similarity you and Dave have is that you have had the ability to discuss issues that will become either the norm or an extreme part of public discourse long before they actually come into fashion. People talk about mental health all the time now. They didn't when you started talking about depression. And I just want to thank you for that. And if you have anything to say about being an advocate for that, I appreciate it.
I'm not sure what caused me to do that. I'm so glad it happened.
Yep.
Not the depression, obviously, which somebody, by the way, called the worst agony designed for man. real depression. It's not sadness. It's not feeling down. It's not even feeling just awful about it. It is dark. You're trapped in it. You think it's never going to end.
Yeah.
And I remember how I would, in the times I was not in it, say to people, I know what you're going through. One day the curtain will go up and you'll remember what it felt like to be alive.
Yeah.
I was on a show with a friend of mine who had an English actor who was rather notorious for his bipolar episodes. And we were talking about this. Mm-hmm. And I said, there's something, isn't there, that you must never say to someone in depression? And he said, yes. And almost together, lip sync, we said, what have you got to be depressed about? You know, you can say, well, you've got a show, or you've got you're doing well in the movies, or you have a wonderful wife, and yet you're hanging dark, deep in depression. And you don't say that.
No.
And
he said with the best intent.
Like saying to someone, what have you got to have asthma about?
Exactly.
It's a disease, dummy.
Yep.
Well, anyway.
No, I'm glad you're saying that, because there are a lot of well-meaning people in the culture now. There's a phrase, and I think it goes a little too far, but they call it toxic positivity. I think that goes a little far, but people who have the right intention, because they view the world from their perspective. But how do you tell somebody, like you say, asthma? That is a perfect analogy for that.
Yeah.
Oh, just start breathing. You'd never tell somebody with asthma, oh no, just take a deep breath. That's absurd. But with depression, that is the perfect analogy for telling somebody to get your chin up and you'll be fine. It's a different deal.
I've gotten a lot of grateful remarks about that. And the best thing about it, of course, sounds strange. The best thing about it is when somebody will say to me, you saved my dad's life or my sister's life. And it had to do with that strange, perhaps the only good use of celebrity that people will say, my God, if he can have it, I guess it's okay for me to have it.
Yeah.
And that saved some people, that insight that he got over it. And I mean, guess maybe I will too. But if anybody you know, you love, is independent in it, deal with them, be their best friend, get them help.
Yeah.
The one, or rather unattractive aspect to depression is it leads to suicide.
Yeah.
There's that, flippantly phrased, but that's the fear. And the number of people have said, gee, my kid was doing okay in school and he was on the football team and he killed himself.
Yeah.
Don't say you'll be fine. Don't say go to the movies and feel better. Don't say have a nice drink and go to a party. Get help.
Yeah. I appreciate that so much. You talking about this. Do you have a few more minutes for me? Like, are we okay for a little while, or are you all right? I got a couple little things.
Let's pretend that I do, because I hate to say this. It sounds so sappy, but I like you.
Oh my God. Oh, thank you.
Doesn't happen that often, by the way. These things are often miserable.
Well, I don't know, man. I have, in doing research for this, and by the way, what you just talked about, how at some of your appearances, people will come up and say that. I was talking to your friend and mine, Eddie Brill, this week. Oh, he's great. And we were talking, we were on the phone, and he had a lovely time at the wedding, by the way.
Oh, that's good.
He was telling me, because
he
does.
To please Eddie Brill.
What's that?
I like to please Eddie Brill.
Don't we all?
He's a
Don't
good
we
guy.
All? Especially back when he was booking for Letterman.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But he talked about how he does the tribute to Johnny Carson every year in Nebraska and whatnot, and how you have been so supportive of that. And he, when I was asking him a little bit of background and apparently you like him too, by the way. He said to me, he goes, one of the most powerful things I've ever seen with Dick is that I'd be standing with him and somebody would come up and say, thank you for saving my life, my loved one's life, that kind of a thing, because of his talk of depression. So yes, I want to echo that. And other people are echoing that as well. My wife certainly would with the uphill battle that she is trying to, you know, destroy stigma and whatnot. We don't like talking about when we're weak. And so thank you again for that.
I think it ranks with, it's akin to what Richard Burton did on a show of mine.
Yeah.
When, strangely, I thought, should I do this or not, when I had him on? And then I sort of heard myself say, would you be willing to talk about booze? And there was a kind of gasp from the audience. And he said, I think I've probably said enough about booze in my life. But then he did. He said, what it's like to be a drunk.
Yep.
He had several phrases, but one of them was, he said, talking to people who were suffering the problem, I know what it's like. I have been there. I am probably going to be there again. I hope not. But I feel sorry for you, and you can get better. But I know what it feels like when it's always 3 o'clock in the morning. And more people were taken by that, grateful for that, helped by that.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the good uses of television. Yeah.
Absolutely. Television can connect people, and broadcasting in general, the internet's doing it now, connects people, and it can be used for good or evil. When you don't feel that you're alone, that can be the greatest comfort in the entire world. It can also be weaponized with tribalism and echo chambers, and people don't listen. Then they're not able to listen because they've got so many people around them saying the same thing. But I like the former much more than the latter, that we can be there for each other and connect that way, knowing that we're not alone. That takes the edge off many times.
It's strange use. It's again, maybe I'd already said this, but one of the good uses of, maybe the best of celebrity, is that we'll have that magic quality, because people think of celebrities as godly in some way, in many cases. My God, it can happen to Richard Burton. Wow. To be suffering as a drunk and be able to talk about, but alcohol organizations all asked, who hadn't seen it, if I could get them a copy of that Burton talking about drunk, being a drunk, because they, and the, we always show them how to get it. It's online, by the way, if you haven't seen it. Burton Cabot, I'm sure, will bring it to you. But he saved lives.
Yep.
He changed lives. And television should be used more often for that sort of thing.
And then reapplied. Again, one of the similarities that you and Dave have is you both have these unique, both because they are unique, both unprecedented bodies of work. And like you alluded to earlier, the whole reason for this show, the whole reason that this show exists, is like Dave and company, yourself, Dick Cavett and company, you're mining for gold every day, and you find some gold, you find some diamonds, you find some precious, precious things. And then you just cast them aside that fast because there's another show and you keep mining. Our goal is to pick up these things and talk about them. That's what's happening with Dave's YouTube channel, which is still in many ways in its infancy when you compare it to the body of work out there. Your YouTube channel is incredible, and I cannot endorse it enough that people should go on. It's Dick from all of his different eras talking about things, including the Richard Burton clip is there, but there is so much. And I'm grateful for the fact that my generation is really the first that can say, that there is a record. You talk about your tapes being erased and removed from the ether. My generation is the first one that has actually been able to have record of these things, and then we can repurpose them into the new technology for a new audience. And in my opinion, yeah, that's wisdom transferred.
That is a public service. That sounds kind of square, but it really is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There can be, you can do good. But I can remember also thinking, my God, I've already done hundreds of shows. Is this ever going to end? And then, of course, it would. And then it would start again. And then strange, but boy.
Did you watch the Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shandling?
Did I watch what?
The Larry Sanders Show back in the day with
Gary Shandling? Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, that was one of television's best moments, times, epics, episodes, periods, chapters. Stop me before I keep talking.
No, keep talking. Yeah, that,
Sanders, excellent stuff.
You just reminded me, as you were talking about the grind, and it just reminded me of a picture of Gary. When he was, it was a promo shot for the show, or might have even been a cover of the DVD, and it's just him with his head in his hands, and it's just, you know, you could see him kind of shaking his head, and that to me is the plight of the late night host, and you know, it takes a special kind of breed to do it. As we kind of move towards the end, and I am heartbroken to say that. If ever you ever want to come back, you have a standing invite. Hell, you can have the damn show if you want it. You can come on here anytime you like.
That's touching. By the way, in stuff I got about you that my wife had got through talking to you on, is the mention of a thing called a special I did called Where It's At.
Yes, sir.
I can't find that online anywhere.
Really? Well, hold on a second. Can I let's ad lib a little bit.
Do what you do.
Let's ad lib and let's see if I can make this happen. Do you have any memory of this, sir?
What? Is that me?
That's you, sir.
Is this where it's at?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll be damned. Well, I'll be going to send you $10 if you'll run off a copy of this and send it to me.
Oh, there's no $10 necessary, sir. Look at that kid. Look at that kid.
Gee, how did it all happen?
I think Don and I, and Don's here, we can talk. I think 67, I think, is we tried to date it as best we could. We think it was around 67 that was put out there. I don't think we violated any copyrights. What's that?
Well, I did two or three specials. I know that one of them was Where It's At, and the other one was What's In. All I remember about Where It's At is I said, look at the way they build this. And I held up a sign that said, Where It Sat. And that's all I remember about it. But I'm sure it had other highlights.
That was I think that was What's In, right, Don?
Say again?
Oh, Don, I just want Don to start talking, but his microphone's off. So we'll get him.
There we go.
Sorry. That's okay.
No Coward's Kid, and now I can't remember his name. He was on the show and he was singing Bob Dylan's Mr. Tambourine Man, but in a way that the name and the name of the song was not familiar to the audience. So that would put it at around 64, maybe early 65. And the director of that show was Hal Gurney.
There we go. Hal Gurney. David Letterman's
Hal Gurney. Oh, yes, my sir. God. Yes.
Yes, sir.
A major part of my life. Yeah. Hal Gurney.
I have to go after I'm getting my COVID shot in around 15 minutes. Okay. So I have to split. I have one very minor trivial question. Bobby Rosengarten.
Yes.
He left the Tonight Show and then he worked on your show. Was that cause and effect, or was there no relationship whatsoever?
I really don't know. I know that there are things like that that people were involved in putting my show together. And somebody said, if we can get Rosengarten, and it never occurred to me that it would happen, but we did. And we had a mm-hmm. wonderful run and times together. Yeah, Bobby Rosengarten.
Okay, that's it.
People didn't know what a genius he was because of one thing he did. And I didn't get it either. Ever so often, I would say who the guest was or what they were going to talk about, and then there would be music. It had to be pointed out to me later by my wife or somebody, don't you get it? He's chosen the song such and such, which is a joke on what you're doing in the show. And I didn't get it. I mean, I wish I could think of it. Oh, yeah, okay. So I had on Jan Morris, mm-hmm. formerly James Morris of the Queen's Royal Lancers, military mm-hmm. gentleman, who became one of the most prominent sex changes. She agreed to come on the show, assuming that I would be serious with her.
Respectful.
And
not yep.
so on. And she did. But when I was startled that night when I watched the Jan Morris show back, and I said, here is Jan Morris, and the band played There'll Be Some Changes Made. And I often missed those, but many other people got them, people hipper than I. Yeah, good guy.
I'm punching up something here.
So while Don's doing that, and of course, that is another similarity right there. I'm glad we got it, because Paul Schaefer and the band, you know, synonymous for they would do that. They would do that absolutely all of the time. They would play something clever for somebody coming out. And
yeah,
I love that. And when you catch a little subtlety like that, you get a special kind of, I don't know if it's a dopamine hit or what it is in your head that happens when you catch the band doing something clever like that.
Well, and people seem to enjoy my admission that they got it when I didn't. Yeah.
One last thing. It probably isn't the last. Gaultier.
Say again?
Gaultier.
I still don't know what you said.
Oh, Gaultier. This will be deducted from your share in Paradise.
Oh,
there. Oh, thank you, Don.
Ah, thank you.
There it is.
There
I'm
it
glad.
Is.
I came in today in order to learn something, and I'm
I got to go.
Source of knowledge. Okay, good.
Thank you, Don.
As I said before we started, I'm going to repeat something you said to Groucho. I'm your biggest fan.
Oh, you know, that's so good to hear. By the way, of all the things Groucho did, one of my favorites is he was invited to a seance. And the people who invited to the seance were serious about contacting the other mm-hmm. world. And he sat there politely as the seance lady said, I am in touch now with the other world. Yes, I am in touch with the other world. Does anyone have a question? And a familiar voice said, what is the capital of North Dakota? He said they chased him several blocks.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Don. Okay. Appreciate you very, very much, man. Thank you. I have a great way for us to kind of take this thing to a close, even though I do not like that at all.
We can always reopen it sometime.
Oh, you said the magic words. You just made my day. I'll be walking on air the rest of my day for you saying that, Dick. Thank you.
Oh, be careful. That's dangerous. Okay.
I, you know, a lot of these, I would like a couple of words, and if it leads to a paragraph or a story, fair enough. I've got some people who have been, whether it's tangentially or directly connected between you and Dave, people in common, that, and if you just want to say a few words about some of these people, that would be fantastic. Number one is Jack Rollins.
The legendary Jack Rollins. The late Jack Rollins, who, to his amusement, lived to be 100 years old, was a legendary spotter of talent. He came from nowhere, as people inaccurately say, to discover Harry Belafonte and a list of headline names and immortals, one after the other. Someone named Woody Allen was one of the people. Jack was a prince among thieves as a talent discoverer and manager and handler.
Fantastic. Charles Grodin.
Grodin. I've always been a great fan of Grodin. Grodin always amused me seemingly from the moment I first laid eyes on him or met him. Yeah, not many people are as good as Grodin.
Don Rickles.
Who?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I wish you were here to hear that. Oh, that's a perfect. That.
Rickles is really a phenomenon because his ability to do what he did that well, and it's a tricky thing to do, and it can go off the rails so quickly. And so his instant choices of what to say and do put him among the greats. Rickles. Yeah. Some, I think it was my friend Pat McCormick who said, I went over, I called on Don at home one day, but he was out walking his rat. he engendered that sort of thing.
Rickles. Don't tell Frank. Frank didn't like rats. Paul Newman.
Paul Newman. Yeah. We hit it off right away. I from the very beginning, I just was very flattered and glad that we liked each other a lot. And he was a marvelous talk show guest. And a brilliant actor. Not everybody has either one of those. Yeah. Newman, first class tops.
Tom Snyder.
Tom Snyder. Who's that?
He was a talk show host. Okay. Oh, you got me. Oh, you got me.
That's a cheap trick, and I'm ashamed that I did it.
Oh, my God. You got me so good.
My memory of Tom Snyder, let's see, I wonder if I can recall this correctly. Tom Snyder, when I was on with him, people said, by the way, he has one obsession. All he wants to be is asked to be a guest on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And they said, it's just, it's killing him. So I was on with Snyder. And I said a word that's ambiguous. I wish I remember what it was. He's something or other. And he said, well, he took it the wrong way. He didn't really know this word. He thought it was an insult. And he said, people are always not saying enough of great about him. To say something like that about him is terrible. And he was defending him. And I said, well done, but he's still not going to have you on the show. From the control, through the control room window, this is a visual. From the control room window, I saw from people on the staff.
Oh, that's lovely.
But Tom Snyder had his good sides.
Without a doubt. I'm not even going to say his last name, Merv.
Mervilla? Yeah. I had a nice time with Merv. He was a so easy to get along with.
Yep.
He was good with jokes.
Yep.
He did his really a first rate monologue, which is not that easy. Merv also was a fine fellow. Hmm. I'm not sure whether it's true or that I should say this, but I almost clearly remember his telling me once, coming back from some trip or something, my wife said the interesting thing to me. She said, what if there were a show where you started with the answer and went back to the question? I think of that every time I see the words Merv Griffin invented.
And as usual, of course, she gets no credit at all in that, right?
Yeah, well, sure.
Hi,
Hi, Martha.
Hi, did I miss anything?
Not at all. Well, you missed it. You missed us talking about how great you are. You did miss that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I missed that. But at any rate, yeah.
And Chisholm itself is good. If you're invited on this show,
I told you that. I told you that I was really taken with him on the phone.
Yeah.
So, but I am going to come in here and sort of start wrapping you guys up.
Okay. Well, we're in the midst of wrapping up right now. That's perfect. Good timing, Martha. Thank you. And I'm leaving this in because you are so delightful.
Isn't that the case?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
That's one of those things you'd say anyway, but it's nice when it's true, isn't it? Yeah.
All right. Well,
I had a 5-minute conversation because I had a background in marketing at one point, and I had a listening to a talk that she has coming up, and she told me about it. And I felt, you talk about this here, you know, for the visuals, you talk about this. I felt like I had one of those because I could hang in a conversation with her for 5 minutes about marketing.
You know what you're doing. I mean, that's exactly what I would expect from somebody with.
Oh yeah. You're not
WWE.
You're not in any sense negligible. Some guys really know how to make a compliment, don't they?
I love you guys.
Yeah,
you too. I just got a couple more and then we're wrapped up.
Okay.
All right.
Robin Williams.
It's sad about Robin. That's the first thing that strikes me about him, because as John Groucho said about Jonathan Winters, there's a giant talent. Robin did not get all the breaks, finally. Immensely wonderful. I sometimes go back and watch some appearance of his, and I laugh real hard. Yeah. He had it.
Yeah. Richard Pryor.
Oh, Pryor. One of the great inventions of all time. I knew Pryor. We were on a thing together. We went to some army base and did a show together with two or three other showbiz people like us.
Yep.
And I got to know Richard closer up then, and realized how much there was to him. I don't think he was underestimated in any sense. Maybe some people thought if they didn't get it, that was their fault.
Certainly not posthumously, though. I mean, posthumously, not underestimated in any way, shape, or form. But isn't it sad sometimes when that's what it takes to make sure that that's realized? There's a clip of you and Richard, and this is one of those things that we didn't get to today, but I'll get to it right now, really, really quick. Just comes a point with many broadcasters where the host suddenly has found themselves that they are actually bigger than the guests 99% of the time that are in the chair beside them. Certainly that is the case with you. It certainly became the case with Dave. There was a part where you asked Richard in an interview, I think it was after the fire for sure, after he burned himself. But you had said something to Richard about something that was in an interview a while back. And he was like, what? Did I say that? And you kind of gave him another little opportunity to talk about it. And then you said something like, well, don't leave my ass out here alone, man. Like you really stood up to this giant of comedy. And I'm like, okay, there's one of those moments where the host actually every once in a while, the host has to, as Gordie Howe would do, you know, throw an elbow as Gordie Howe would do. And I just, yeah. I loved that when hosts would do that. And that was a moment that I loved.
Well, I wish I'd done it 100 times just for you.
Well, with the beauty of YouTube, you did, because I can watch it over and over again. Steve Allen.
He was a remarkable guy. That's a dumb statement. He was extremely smart, which made some people in show business not like him because they were aware of how superior he was, I think. But Steve Allen was one of the treasures of it. Somebody should put together a tribute show to him. What was it I remember once? Oh, his ad-libs were genius. This may not be the greatest one, but he was in the audience with a hand mic once, and he gave a mic to some lady, and he said, are you a good person? Do you do good things? And she said, well, I always eat my greens. And he said, you must be very popular on the golf course. That's good. Steve
that
Allen.
Is, if there is one thing that himself, you, whether you like it or not, you are in that category. And then, of course, you know, who might be the king of them is David Letterman. It's the rapid fire response that is rapier like in its wit and humor and all of that, and just it astounds me. If there's a gift that you gentlemen and others, of course, but have that I could ever transfer, that would be the one, despite your athletic ability. Jack Parr.
Want me to summarize Jack Parr?
Couple words. First couple words that come to your mind.
Well, just to be refreshing, but well, I don't think I almost could say I never missed a Jack Parr show that was broadcast in my lifetime. I was so hooked on Jack Parr. And as an out-of-work actor, the only thing that kept me going when I was making the rounds and leaving a casting director's office and hearing my 8x10 hit the wastebasket, and I could go home and look forward to the Jack Parr at night. And that was so wonderful, so wonderful.
That is how I and a legion of people feel about David Letterman, which is the whole reason the show exists. We're going to finish off with, predictably, David Letterman.
Letterman's overrated. Are we on the air?
Oh, yeah. This is great.
Yeah. There was a time where I thought, am I the only one who knows about this guy? When I first saw him,
yeah,
I thought, I got to tell everybody to watch for David Letterman. He's going to go places.
Yep.
Shrewd on my part, eh? But I was able to discern talent in David Letterman. What could be easier? He's a giant.
Yep. Without a doubt. It takes one to know one, sir.
Jack Parr was one of the oddest people I ever met.
Oh, yeah?
Most neurotic. One of the most difficult in many ways.
You're talking about Jack here. You're talking about Jack here?
Jack Parr.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Parr, yeah.
Yeah.
Odd, neurotic, touchy, and yet such a... such a mountain of talent, his ad libs still occur to me sometimes years later. One night he had Jackie Leonard on to the young folks. Jackie Leonard was a rather fat insult comic with a rapid delivery. And Jack, in a mean, interesting, funny way, said, "Dick, tonight we got Fat Jack on the show. You know how whatever you say, he comes right back at you. And then you have to say something to him so he can come back at you again. And you have to say something and he comes right back at you again. Tonight, I'm just going to sit silently and stare at him." Fat Jack came on and he said, you know, oh God, I've lost more than weight than you are. Here's your, where's your left thumb? And the staccato delivery of his, and Jack didn't say anything, and Leonard started to sweat. The indomitable Jackie Leonard suddenly was scared. It was a strange, almost sad thing to watch. And finally, the silence was still going on, and Leonard, in desperation, just reached for a fact and said the fact. And the fact was, you know, my wife is an acrobat, and Jack said she'd have to be. And that was Jack at his best, or anybody's best. Yeah, we've had.
Good night, everybody. That's I can't think of a better way to end this first conversation. You heard it here first, everybody. There's going to be a potential second one, Dick, I just cannot thank you enough. So you inspired the guy that I just absolutely idolize as a broadcaster, and of course you are one that I would put in the same category. I cannot thank you enough for everything that you have contributed to the world of, and think about this, pop culture, you think about social issues, entertainment, of course, but the way that you have done it in an authentic fashion. The one thing about you that I loved is your authenticity more than, I would probably put that higher than anything in the conversations that you have had with people. I love long form. The YouTube clips are great, don't get me wrong, but the thing that really gets me going is long form. You, sir, might be, the top of the heap when it comes to long form. I cannot thank you enough for the body of work that you have given to the world. Thank you for being you, and thank you for coming here today to talk to someone like me. I cannot thank you enough, Dick.
Would you mind repeating all that again?
Sure, absolutely.
That was one of the best moments of my life. Thank you.
I'm gonna do a real quick goodbye right here, and then we'll say our goodbye privately. So just stay here for one moment, please.
Okay.
I don't think it's any secret that this has been an absolute thrill for me. One of the greatest, certainly one of the greatest moments of my, fledgling broadcasting endeavor. That is the Letterman podcast. This has been another episode of the Letterman podcast with Mike Chisholm. Coincidentally, I am Mike Chisholm. Thank you and good night.
Overcoat and underpants.